Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And there are few who are more exemplary heroes in that fight than our first guest. He is retired United States Navy Admiral James Ace Lyons. He is the former Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet, capping a 36-year career in the United States Navy. He is currently the president and CEO of Lyon Associates, a premier global consultancy, and a man who is contributing mightily to our current understanding of the challenges of our day through his many, many superb columns in the Washington Times, and also, I'd like to think, through his service as the chairman of the Military Committee of the Center for Security Policy. Admiral Lyons, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's always great to have you.
It's nice to be here, Frank.
We want to visit most especially on the occasion of this State of the Union address by President Obama about the state of the United States military. I don't frankly expect it will feature prominently in the president's remarks this evening, and we'll know more about that later, of course. But give us, as a former senior commander of our military, your assessment of where we are today with respect to both our capabilities and how they're perceived around the world, Admiral.
Well, the unilateral disarming of our military is disastrous. In fact, what we're doing is jeopardizing our national security. The military has been operating under a continuing resolution, which has basically cut about $850 billion out of the budget. And here we are faced with sequestration for another $500 billion. As the Secretary of Defense, Liam Panetta, has said, this will be devastating. It is most welcome by our enemies.
And for the reason that it would ensure, if it ran its full course, as you understand so well, Admiral, a dramatic reduction in our presence overseas, in our power projection capability, in the quality of our forces overall, in fact, may even break our all-volunteer force. Looking at it from the perspective of a commander in the Pacific, most especially, knowing what you know of what's happening in China at the moment, we'll come to North Korea in a moment, but what does this augur, as you see it, in terms of the likelihood that some adversaries will take advantage of our seeming weakening and irresolution?
Well, there's no question about that. China has been on a massive military buildup with no known threat. Their very aggressive illegal actions in the South and East China Sea, where they basically claim it all as part of their historic territory, is a manifestation of their aggressiveness. The North Korean situation, which they just exploded a nuclear event this morning. And you can rest assured, Frank, that on site were Iranian scientists, test engineers, and military personnel who most likely participated in the conduct of that test. As far as the number of ships we have in the Navy today, 287 ships, is basically what I had under my command in the Pacific Fleet. Under sequestration and the continuing resolution and the policies that the Obama administration has implemented, we're now headed for the smallest army we've had since prior to World War II, and most likely we're headed to the smallest Navy we had ever had prior to World War One.
Wow. And Admiral, again, just to give us a practical sense of that, say you're the commander in Pearl Harbor today, and you have, 100 or so ships under your command? The numbers that are actually deployable, the numbers that are at sea, the numbers that are able to demonstrate, by showing the flag, as it were, our presence, our commitment, what does that mean in a practical sense when we're seeing, for example, China beginning, as you say, to assert sovereignty and bully our allies over islands and reefs and the like?
Well, the problem is we do not have sufficient ships to carry out our assigned missions. Today, we only have 9 deployable carriers. With the retirement of the Enterprise, with over almost 50 years of service and the 4-year overhaul of the Abraham Lincoln, we are down to 9 deployable carriers, which means with a 3-to-1 ratio that we work on, we have to take the current forces that we have and extend their deployment by 50%. And what this means is you're wearing out your ships, your aircraft, and most importantly, your personnel. The end result is your readiness has gone down and you're not able to respond and carry out the mission. All the missions that have been assigned to you.
Yeah. Now, Jen, let me just get this very clearly said. What that can mean, what history tells us it means in the past, is it not, Admiral Ace Lyons, that the circumstances are conducive to miscalculation at best and war at worst? And if we get ourselves into a shooting war with China at the moment, how would you characterize our ability to meet the challenges that it now represents?
We will be very hard-pressed with the resources that we'll have immediately available. You know, we haven't really talked about it, but China has a very high priority strategic nuclear weapon program. They have over 3,000 miles of underground reinforced tunnels, which, in addition to both their fixed and rail mobile missiles, which present a tremendous threat, and along with their newly developed strategic ballistic missile submarines. That operate out of underground submarine pens on their Hainan Island. And of course, what happens here? What happens to their client states like Iran and so forth? I mean, you know, we've never even. Iran today has fixed missile sites in Venezuela. According to Ambassador Roger Noriega,
with whom
those sites are
right?
operational today and can target American cities. This is what the Soviets tried to do in Cuba,
right?
And back in 1962.
Let me ask you this.
Under the Monroe Doctrine, we didn't let that happen then, and we cannot let it happen, continue to happen now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Admiral Ace Lyons, in just last minute or so, you were one of 14 senior retired military officers who, of all the services, who have written a letter to the Senate urging rejection of the Hagel nomination. It is going to a vote in the Senate Armed Services Committee today. By the time we're airing this, the die will have been cast in committee. But before it goes to the Senate floor, what would you say to the senators with respect to this nomination?
Well, first of all, the Senator Hagel, by his previous positions, is unqualified to lead the Department of Defense, the key element in our national security. His positions with regard to Iran and our other enemies, and his position on disarmament, his position with regard to one of our key allies in the Middle East, Israel, should disqualify him for any such high, important position.
Well, I couldn't agree more again. Admiral Ace Lyons, I appreciate your insights, your experience, your service to our country, both that in the past, that you're engaged in at the moment, and that I know you will continue to render through your writings at the Washington Times and at the Center for Security Policy Military Committee, among other things. Admiral, thank you very much for joining us. Next up, Dr. Barry Rubin will give us a sense of the state of the world or the Union or the Middle East at the very least, and his perspective in Israel right after this.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, the adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
Be your best friend for life.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, the Threat to America at amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying we're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Barry Rubin. He is the executive director of a marvelous organization, the Gloria Institute at Herzliya in Israel. He is one of the world's leading authorities on the Muslim Brotherhood, the author of Israel, An Introduction, among many other works, and a man that we turn to with regularity to discuss what is going on with respect to the U.S. interests in and the security of the Middle East, not least his native land of Israel. Dr. Rubin, we are, of course, tonight being treated to the president's version of the State of the Union, and to some extent he will at least touch on the state of the world, I imagine. Give us, if you would, your perspective on where we are some 4+ years into the Obama presidency, especially as it relates to American interests in the Middle East.
Right. Well, the following countries now have Islamist regimes, which are, in essence, anti-American. Turkey, which Obama proclaims is his closest friend and role model. The Gaza Strip, which happened earlier, of course. Egypt, Tunisia, Lebanon, and probably soon Syria. The problem is, or the second problem is, that not only do these regimes exist, but in addition to that, the U.S. government has helped them either survive or get into power. So when people talk about appeasement, I say, well, it goes far beyond appeasement because these regimes are actually being assisted by the Obama administration. And the results, both in terms of democracy and in terms of U.S. interests, look increasingly problematic. A lot can be said about the Benghazi incident, but I'll just make one point. It's been over 5 months, and absolutely no progress has been made on catching those responsible. In other words, this appears to be a high-level policy effort, especially since the Libyan government is an American client. Regarding Syria, I have no problem with what degree the U.S. does or doesn't intervene. The problem is on whose behalf is the U.S. government intervening. And it's not just intervening on the part of the opposition to the Syrian dictatorship, it's intervening on the part of radical Islamists, particularly among the opposition to the Syrian dictatorship. And we will see sometime, I guess, in the next year to year and a half, an Islamist government emerging in Syria whose composition, and especially who has the guns, is going to be determined by U.S. policy. And that's shockingly bad. In terms of Iran, I believe that 2013 will be the year of U.S.-Iran talking and negotiations, and it will go on throughout the year. And at the end of that period, the Iranians will still be working on nuclear weapons. So, in fact, the strategic situation is quite bad. It's more visibly bad than it was 6 months or a year ago. But the administration, of course, will not acknowledge any of that.
Yeah. Let's, if we can, drill down quickly on a couple of these countries that you've described very importantly, Dr. Rubin, in terms of the sort of misbegotten nature of our relationship with them, starting with Turkey. This is a country that, as you know, is, of course, a NATO ally. It is a country that we share intelligence with, we share secrets with, we share technology, military hardware, and the rest, and in which the president has invested heavily in his relationship with its Islamist leader, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. What is Turkey up to in the region now, both with respect to Israel, with respect to Iran, and with respect to this Islamist ascendancy?
Right. Well, one should start by stressing that the problem is not the Turkish people as a whole, but the Turkish government. The Turkish government has tremendous ambitions to play a leading role in the region, which will fail because Turks aren't Arabs, and Arabs don't forget that. But Turkey has, in several cases, exercised its influence. Number one, it continues to do all the trade it wants to and cooperate with Iran in the development of energy resources without any apparent objection from the United States. Two, the Turkish regime...
Despite the sanctions and effort to undermine the Iranian regime.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I mean, the U.S. government has given Turkey an exception on the sanctions. It doesn't have to meet the sanctions. Secondly of all, repression at home is increasing. There have been two statements by U.S. ambassador criticizing this, but it's been a very weak effort and certainly hasn't enjoyed the support of the U.S. president. Thirdly of all, Turkey continues to support revolutionary Islamist forces. Most importantly, in Syria, the Turkish government wants to see an Islamist, a Sunni Islamist government in neighboring Syria. Now, the U.S. government policy agrees with that, but I think it's very detrimental to U.S. interests. And of course, the Turkish government supports Hamas, Hezbollah, and says the most outrageously extreme things against Israel. All of these things, not only with no objection by the U.S., But at the time when the president of the U.S. continually extols Turkey and its leaders specifically. See, what doesn't happen otherwise, it's not that U.S. governments don't make mistakes. It's not that they don't misread U.S. interests. It's not even that they don't sometimes engage in appeasement. But what is unprecedented is that anti-American forces are being helped to become stronger, to gain power, to retain power by the U.S. government. And the new leadership team that Obama has put in place is unanimously in favor of this policy, indeed has had a big role in implementing this policy.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, he hasn't put them in place entirely so far. We'll see further progress in that direction, perhaps with the approval after we've conducted this interview of Chuck Hagel in the Senate Armed Services Committee. But we'll be watching that one closely. But Dr. Rubin, let me just and again, our guest is Dr. Barry Rubin of the Gloria Center in Israel. Let me just ask you on this precise point of American involvement with enabling of, empowering, emboldening of its adversaries. Give us a quick sense of where things are in Egypt at the moment. There has been some pushback against the Brotherhood. Is it material? Is it making a difference? Or are we really still on the same dangerous trajectory there?
Oh, this is the second anniversary of the overthrow of the Mubarak government. And again, we see massive demonstrations in the streets of Cairo. But look at the difference in the Obama administration reaction to this. When there were demonstrations against Mubarak, who was allied with the United States, there was tremendous sympathy. The government has to go. Human rights are being violated. Now, today, I believe it's accurate to say that the Muslim Brotherhood government has killed more demonstrators in the past 2 or 3 months than the Mubarak government killed during the entire revolution 2 years ago. Absolutely nothing, no delay in the delivery of advanced arms, zero. And recently, an Egyptian human rights advocate wrote a very powerful open letter to President Obama saying basically, you know, what are you doing? At least all he asked for is please stop praising this regime that's repressing us. I'm not asking you to do anything against it. Just don't keep talking about how wonderful it is.
Yeah. Dr. Rubin, very quickly, and we've only got a minute and a half for a very important subject. What does all this mean for our friend and ally, Israel?
Well, as I always try to say, the main issue, the issue for this second term is not going to be a peace, the now dead peace process. The main problem isn't in U.S.-Israel relations. The problem is how the U.S. strategy in the region endangers Israel. But there are outrageous things. For example, the U.S. State Department has just sponsored a ridiculous study which claimed that Israeli textbooks are just as provocative and antagonistic as Palestinian textbooks, which call for the extinction of Israel. This is nonsense. This shows how this administration goes beyond any other administration. But the main problem is U.S. strategic interests in the region. From Israel's point of view, the growing empowerment of radical Islamists who want to wipe Israel off the map, not primarily in bilateral relations, which basically continue pretty much normally.
It will be fascinating to see the state of the world as seen by President Obama tonight and to compare notes with you, Dr. Barry Rubin, after it's over. We appreciate very much your taking a few minutes to talk with us today, and we'll look forward to visiting with you again very soon. Next up, Roger Noriega joins us. We'll get his take on the state of Latin America, what it means for you. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Sanger.
I had a feeling about this. I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit cards.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Tonight's address by President Obama should be thought of less as an assessment of the State of the Union than as a state of the transformation. After all, it's an important opportunity to take stock on the extent to which his self-declared purpose of, quote, fundamentally transforming the United States of America, unquote, is actually improving or degrading our economy, our healthcare system, and our national security. A case in point is the nuclear test North Korea performed this morning. It's a reminder not only of the degree to which that nation and its allies, notably Russia, China, Pakistan, and Iran, are continuing to improve their threatening nuclear capabilities. In fact, only President Obama is pursuing a world without nuclear weapons, starting with ours. That's reckless and must stop now. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Roger Noriega, the man we consult with great regularity, among other things, the state of our hemisphere. He is, of course, the former Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs under President George W. Bush, also served as the U.S. Permanent Representative to the Organization of American States. Today, he is a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a driving force behind InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com, one of the really, really valuable resources on what is happening south of our border, and much is. In fact, one of the things, Roger Noriega, that you have been tracking probably better than just about anybody else, certainly in this country, is the state of Hugo Chavez's health. Give us the latest on the Venezuelan dictator and his future prospects.
Well, the latest news that we have is that the surgery and the recovery process, note that he's been out of sight for over 2 months now, to treat his cancer has now caused perhaps the permanent loss of his voice, and that his doctors have basically informed his family that this guy's not going to return to power, maybe not even return to Venezuela. So here, note this also, his family's out of sight. I mean, they're essentially sequestered by the Cubans who are trying to manage this to hold on to power because they need the access to the Venezuela's free oil and aid and all of that. So it's a real dramatic development because right now Venezuelan people are living under a de facto government and the capital happens to be in Havana.
Isn't that amazing? Roger Noriega, what is the legal status of the Chavez presidency? Did he get
re-inaugurated by the court, or how did this? Is he effectively still in charge?
Well, imagine if Barack Obama hadn't taken the oath of office for a second term. Well, actually, that's kind of a good scenario, but he still held on to power. That's what's happened in Venezuela. Chavez wasn't able to return to Venezuela on Inauguration Day, but the National Assembly and the court approved that he can basically take it at his convenience. That's a ruse to keep the current vice president in charge of the country. Maduro is the favorite of Havana, and they are afraid of power passing to an alternative Chavista that Havana doesn't trust. So it's a very, very, quite frankly, illegal sort of an arrangement, but that's what passes for constitutional order in Venezuela today.
One of the things that has just happened, as I understand it, speaking of Venezuela and speaking of the role that it's playing in our hemisphere, that is making the State of the Union there, or the State of the Hemisphere, problematic for the United States, Roger, is the Venezuelan military's industrial complex and its relationship with Iran. We were talking earlier with Admiral Lyons about Iran's relationship with the North Koreans. What's the latest on that, and what the Obama administration has seen fit to do about it?
Well, late last night, the U.S. government announced new sanctions against Venezuela's industrial company called Cavim. This is the second time in 3 years that it's been sanctioned for providing arms and military technology to Iran. This is a very troubling development and should be more than a bump in the road for the State Department's normalization efforts. Here you have a leading sponsor of terrorism in the world receiving this kind of critical support from a country right here in our hemisphere. And it's the tip of the iceberg, quite frankly.
Does it likely mean a serious disruption to the business that this particular company, or for that matter, the rest of the narco-kleptocratic Chavez regime is up to with one of the most dangerous countries on the planet?
Well, no, quite frankly, it won't amount to very much. And if we want to do something serious, we go straight at the heart of that regime, which is the oil company, which I think launders hundreds of millions of dollars, not only for Iran, but for the narco traffickers. So that's one of the biggest scandals, quite frankly, on the world stage today, is that Venezuela's state-run oil company is essentially a money laundering machine for the world's most nefarious characters.
Yeah. Speaking of Iran and its relationships in our hemisphere, which is ominous, there have also been developments with respect to Iran's relationship with Argentina. What's going on there, Roger Noriega? And again, what are the implications for the hemisphere and for us?
Well, the extraordinarily, breathtakingly cynical regime of Cristina Kirchner in Argentina, whose country suffered a couple of attacks at the hands of Hezbollah in the 1990s, is helping.
Murderous.
Absolutely. 114 dead people and many, many hundreds wounded in bombings in Buenos Aires in 92 and 94. And Kirchner is helping Tehran launder its image, wash its face, really. This infamous Truth Commission, where the Iranians, the attackers, are going to be able to help investigate what happened in those incidents. And it's
positively Orwellian to think that that's going to be a truth commission. If anything, it will be a conceal the truth commission.
And quite frankly, it's just no stone will be left unturned for the folks in Argentina to make corrupt deals and launder their pockets, align their pockets with this kind of blood money from Iran. It shows, quite frankly, the level of depravity that's going on in a couple of regimes in opening their doors and rolling out the red carpet for Iran right here in our hemisphere.
Yeah. Roger Noriega, let me turn to another topic, which I suspect will feature, if not in the President's State of the Union address, certainly in the response to it by Senator Marco Rubio, which I gather will be given in both English and in Spanish, which is an interesting innovation, namely the Keystone Pipeline. This, of course, is a pipeline that is intended to move oil from another part of our hemisphere, north of our border, Canada, and to much of our country and to, I guess, refineries and transportation hubs in the Gulf. What is your reading on the importance of proceeding with that pipeline and the likelihood that President Obama will do so?
Well, it's the canary in the coal mine for Obama's energy strategy, quite frankly. It shows his really zealous ideological opposition to hydrocarbons.
And it really is ideological. I mean, this has nothing to do with economics or energy policy. It is ideology about what, carbon emissions, or about trying to wean us off of carbon-based fuels?
Well, as a taxi driver here told me a few months ago, this isn't Beijing. I think they all want us riding bicycles. But, you know, quite frankly, this is a no-brainer. We could be energy independent in North America, and the Keystone Pipeline is an integral part of that. And the Canadians, you know, our best friends and our biggest trading partner in the world, are sitting right there offering this to us. They could easily offer it to our strategic opponent, China, but instead they're offering it to us. And if President Obama can't find his way to approve that, it will be absolutely scandalous. There are no environmental problems remaining here, and I hope he will be held accountable by the American people if he fails to take this strategic important move, not only to our security but to our economy.
Yeah, it really is one of these litmus tests, it seems to me, as to whether what he's doing is the advancing of an ideological agenda, as you say, Roger Noriega, or whether it is working to bring about a transformation of the United States that is consistent with our long-term best interests. He's all about transforming it, for sure, but the second part of that that characterization is a little unclear. And most especially, as you understand so well, given your past experiences as Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, Roger, this is a secure source of energy, something we are, I think, going to find is harder and harder to come by elsewhere around the world. Roger, as always, thank you very much for this tour d'horizon of the hemisphere, a state of the hemisphere report from you. We appreciate it and look forward to having another one in the very near future. Next up, we'll be talking with Andy McCarthy. We'll get his reading on the Hagel and Brennan nominations and much, much more. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the Southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express traveler's checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express Travel Service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to
the Gospel. I just got
to
stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom, it's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. The high point of my week, visiting with Andy McCarthy. I'm sure it is for you, too. He is, of course, the former federal prosecutor turned pundit extraordinaire. Truly, one, pundit doesn't begin to do justice to him. He is one of the most brilliant thinkers, analysts, writers, and articulators of the challenges we're facing, particularly at the nexus of national security and the law. Andy McCarthy, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, especially on this eve as we are listening about this time to the president making his State of the Union assessment. What's your reading on the State of the Union at the moment, Andy?
Well, Frank, as far as the State of the Union is concerned in our threat environment, I think we're in extraordinarily dangerous times. And I think, if people want to get a sense of how dangerous it is, I'd highly recommend a piece that was written by our friend John Bolton at the Daily Beast yesterday, which explores the implications of the testimony given by top Obama administration officials about a week ago in connection with the Benghazi attacks. Not only in terms of the strange detachment of the commander-in-chief at a time when Americans were under siege, about the, you know, just about the facts of the siege in particular, but more broadly than that,
The failure to ask the sorts of questions about alternative and related scenarios, that, you know, if you have one attack, does that mean that there are more than that attack going on, and what protective measures are in place, what reactive measures are being contemplated, et cetera. The fact that those very elementary questions weren't asked, the fact that you have this bizarre circumstance where a State Department mission is under siege and the Secretary of State, Mrs. Clinton, doesn't even pick up the phone to find out from the security folks of the Pentagon what sorts of things were being done to react and to protect. It's really, I think, very dangerous times for the country in terms of our national security to have an administration that's this detached from reality and from their responsibilities.
Yeah. Detached, Andy, and I don't often find fault with your choice of words, but that seems so inadequate to this. It's dereliction of duty, it seems to me. And I'm often given to asking myself, if this were anybody else, would the press be so completely quiet, silent, ignorant even in addressing these derelictions? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. If it was any other Republican, they certainly would not be. I think that, Obama probably has gotten more of a pass than any Democrat, but that's not to say they wouldn't have given a pass and aren't given a pass, for example, to Hillary Clinton, who is, the heir apparent, at least if
they have their way
these days. But, you know, Frank, the dereliction of duty is an important observation. I've written about it myself. It's an impeachable offense.
It is.
People want to home in on that.
It is. High crimes and misdemeanors. Andy, let's talk about some of these national security appointments. As we speak, the Senate Armed Services Committee is preparing to act on the nomination of Chuck Hagel to be the next Secretary of Defense. It's widely expected on more or less a party line vote. He will be approved. That will send it to the floor. There's talk now by Senator Jim Inhofe, the ranking minority member, and others, of holding it up, subjecting it to what amounts to a filibuster. What do you think is in prospect there, and what should the Senate of the United States be doing with respect to Chuck Hagel at defense?
Well, you know, the hearing confirmed, Frank, everything that we suspected, which is that he is a dangerously inadequate choice for that very important post, which he somehow regards as not even a policymaking position.
Yeah, I was sort of struck by that as a former senior Defense Department official myself. What is he thinking?
You're right. So he's neither, procedurally and competence-wise suited for the position, nor does he even seem to understand what the position is. And my question for our Republican friends, who certainly have the procedural ability to block this nomination by requiring that it get through 60 votes, if they're not going to do that, my question is twofold. Number one, why are we into unilateral disarmament? Because we know that if the roles were reversed, the Democrats would use every procedural means at their disposal to block viable good candidates like they did again with our friend John Bolton. So it doesn't make sense for one side to fight by the Marcus of Queensberry rules when the other side is bringing AK-47s to the fight, you know?
In a matter of speaking.
Yeah, and I guess the second thing is, why have hearings at all? I mean, if you're going to justify this by saying, you know, look, within very, very broad parameters, the president is entitled to the people that he wants in these positions, then wouldn't we be better off? I mean, Hagel was a known quantity. He was in the Senate for many years. Wouldn't we be better off just letting him take the position and not even having a hearing at all if what happens at the hearing is it demonstrates to the world how dangerously we're making it for ourselves in the way that we fill these positions? It actually makes it more dangerous for the country. If you have a hearing, the guy proves himself to be a befuddled, uninformed, incompetent actor who's not really fit for the position, what's the point of advertising that?
the fact that he's also, his judgment is seriously flawed is another in the bill of particulars there. Andy, let's turn quickly to John Brennan. You mentioned him a moment ago. John Bolton's indictment is certainly well-founded. Do you think that this similarly says volumes about the willingness, the determination of this president to undermine our security, particularly to foreign audiences who have understood this guy fully for what he is, an Islamist apologist at best and enabler at worst.
Yeah, well, you know, look, I think you can only regard Brennan's appointment with chagrin if you not only are aware of what his background is, but you then read the transcript of the hearing and find that the Senate, and this is in a bipartisan sense, didn't even bother to challenge him on the major problem with his appointment, which is that the intelligence community is there to reveal threats to us in all of their stark reality, because we want to know the truth of our threat environment. That's what enables us to protect ourselves. And then you match up that mission with the man that Obama has proposed, whose entire career in the Obama administration, certainly this phase of it, has been to throw blinders over our eyes with respect to the ideology that actually fuels the threat against us. I can't imagine anything more damaging to the country's security than having an intelligence community wearing a blindfold, and that's basically what Brennan's about. So the fact that he's going to get through only narrowly, in my mind, is worse than the fact that these guys didn't even bother to ask him the right questions.
Yeah. It goes beyond political correctness, too. I think this is really a matter of, as you say, Andy, the pathology is willful blindness to a degree that it really poses a mortal peril to
right.
us all.
Frankly, as you say, dereliction of duty.
There you go.
Both sides of Capitol.
There you go. Yeah. Let me ask you very quickly, Andy, to talk about one of the things that was prominently featured in the Brennan hearing, namely this whole business of the drones. We had a white paper. We talked about it a little bit before you had a chance to read it last week. You've studied it. You've written about it. A minute on where we are on that.
Well, I think the massive hypocrisy that's involved is the thing that people want to focus in on. You know, the position that the Democrats took pre-Obama versus the position that they have taken since Obama, where you get the absurdity of, you know, they're all bent out of shape over the monitoring of cross-border phone calls, but killing is fine with them. Which, you know, is mind-boggling. But by getting bogged down in the hypocrisy, I think you can miss the more important points, which is that on the constitutional question, the administration is right. This is a settled question. The commander-in-chief does have authority in wartime to treat American enemies as enemy combatants, and that includes American citizens who take up with the enemy. But what I think we need to focus in on now is the fact that what Obama has carved out for himself is a license to use these war powers, which is broader than what the Constitution contemplates. And we're now in a kind of a dangerous area where we're conducting operations that are outside the parameters of the authorization for military force that Congress passed right after 9/11.
This will be a subject for another day's conversation, that in a national security court that you've been doing some serious thinking about. There seems to be some interest in something along those lines. We'll visit with you about that next week. Andy, we look forward to it. We look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afton. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.